Shalom, everybody. Let me begin by saying it's a privilege, joy, and honor that the God of Israel, whose name is Yahweh, has given me to be able to be here with you today and to share with you a message which He has placed upon my heart. And in part, my message, at least the first part of it, is a watchman message. In Jeremiah, in chapter 31 and verse 6, it says, "For there shall be a day that the watchman upon Mount Ephraim will cry, Arise ye and let us go up to Zion unto Yahweh our Elohim." I'd like to submit to you that that day has arrived. And then in Isaiah in chapter 62 and verse 1, "For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof goes forth as brightness and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burns." Verse 6, "I have set watchmen upon your walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day nor night. You that make mention of Yahweh, keep not silent, and give him no rest until he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth." Ultimately, Jerusalem being a praise in the earth is the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel under the Messiah, wherein he is glorified and he sets up his kingdom. There's a duty of the watchman, and it's found in Ezekiel in chapter 33 and verses 1 through 7, which says, "Again, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say unto them, When I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their coasts and set him for their watchman, if when he sees the sword come upon the land, he blow the shofar and warn the people, then whosoever hears the sound of the shofar and takes not warning, if the sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own hand. He heard the sound of the shofar and took not warning, his blood shall be upon him. But he that takes warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman see the sword come and blow not the shofar, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and take any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I have set you a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear the word at my mouth and warn them from me." In order to be an effective soldier, you must know two things. You must know the tactics of your enemy, and you must know how to use your own weapons of warfare, both things. And so I'd like to touch on both of those aspects. I'd like to share with you what's going on in the world around us to hopefully allow you to open up your eyes and see what's going on. That's the tactics of the enemy. But we need to know biblically what should our response be to that which is going on around us. And ultimately, in laying out what's going on around us, our enemy is referred to as a beast, or the beast system, or the beasts of the field. It says in Genesis, in chapter 3 and verse 1, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field." The serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. So the serpent is called a beast of the field. And a beast in the Bible is going to be defined as an enemy of the nation of Israel. And through the disobedience of the nation of Israel, their judgment is to be scattered into the nations of the world. And ultimately, when they're scattered in the nations of the world, the Bible says that the beasts of the field will rule over them. In Deuteronomy, in chapter 7, in verse 22, it says, "And Yahweh your Elohim will put out those nations before you by little and little, that you may not consume them at once, lest the beasts of the field increase upon you." The enemies of the nation of Israel is called the beasts of the field. We can see this in Deuteronomy in chapter 28 and verse 26. "And your carcass shall be meat unto all the fowls of the air and unto the beasts of the earth, and no man shall frighten them away." That is the beasts of the field. Then we have Ezekiel in chapter 34 and verses 4 and 5. "The disease have you not strengthened, neither have you healed that which was sick, neither have you bound up that which was broken, neither have you brought again that which was driven away. Neither have you sought that which was lost, but with force and with cruelty have you ruled over them. And they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and they became meat to all the beasts of the field when they were scattered." So I'm trying to lay out for you that Hasatan, the devil, is likened unto a beast of the field. The enemies of Israel in their exile are likened unto beasts of the field. And now let's go to Daniel in chapter 2. Daniel in chapter 2. And in this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he's troubled by it, and he wants to know the meaning of the dream. And ultimately, the meaning of the dream is revealed to Daniel, and he gives the interpretation of it. Daniel in chapter 2 and verse 31. "Thou, O king, saw and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before you, and the form thereof was terrible. This image head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay." His feet part of iron and part of clay. And then it says in verse 34, "You saw till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and broke them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." And so this image that of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar is likened unto a beast. And the head of the image is Babylon. And then it talks about his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass. That following the Babylonian Empire came the Medes and the Persians, who's likened to the arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass. Greece, the legs of iron, refers to Rome. But the power of the end of days is the ten toes. It says his feet, part of iron and part of clay. And the stone came, and the stone came and crushed the feet, because the beast system of the end of days is ten toes, which consists of part of iron and part of clay, and the stone comes and breaks to pieces the 10 toes, and the stone becomes a great mountain. So the stone is Messiah and the coming of his kingdom, that Messiah judges the nations in the end of days, judges the 10 toes, the beast, and the beast system, and then he sets up his kingdom, the messianic kingdom, which is likened unto a great mountain that it fills the whole earth. So if we're living in the end of days, what we should be witnessing around us is this 10 toes system that is part of iron and part of clay. And in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 41, it says, "For as much as you saw iron mixed with miry clay," and the word mixed is the Aramaic word, and the way you pronounce the word in Aramaic is Arab, iron, Arab, with clay. Now, the part of the toes that were of iron is still the residue of the legs, because the legs are of iron, but then we still have the part of the feet were of iron as well. So part of this 10 toes is the remnant of the legs. And the legs is Rome or the Roman Empire, or you might say Europe or the West. Now, we are told in Jeremiah in chapter 16, it says in verse 16, "Behold, I will send for many fishers, says Yahweh, and they will fish for them." Well, the fishermen were sent out 2,000 years ago, and the fishermen are still being sent out today. And the message of the fishermen is Yeshua is the Messiah. We need to follow his Torah, and that his messianic task is to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel. Ultimately, you are sitting here today because you've heard and you've received that message that Yeshua is the Messiah, that we're to follow his Torah, and that his messianic task is to gather the 12 tribes of Israel. But after sending the fishers, it says, "And I will send for many hunters, and they will hunt them from every mountain, from every hill, and out of the holes of the rocks." And so what the fishers aren't able to accomplish, Yahweh sends the hunters. Well, who in the Bible is referred to as being a hunter? Well, Nimrod is one. It says in Genesis in chapter 10, verse 8, "Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before Yahweh." So Nimrod is called a hunter, and Nimrod built Babylon. Then we have in Genesis in chapter 25, verse 27, it says, "And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter." So he's going to send the hunters. And the hunters are a part of the 10 toes, the beast and the beast system. And where we're at in the development of this, I believe, is very advanced, so much so that we don't have to theorize about what's going to happen. It is happening in our days. It is in our news today. So what I want to focus and explain is of the 10 toes, the part that is iron. Now, it's iron and clay. Let me tell you what I believe the iron and the clay is. The iron represents the Western world, in the efforts of the Western world to bring about a new world order, also referred to as one world government. That effort is being promoted and made possible by the West, Europe, and the United States. They're the leaders in that effort. The clay, I believe, is a reference to Islam and the role that Islam plays. And so, what's Yahweh's purpose for allowing these 10 toes? It is to make life uncomfortable for Israel in exile and to cause them to leave exile and to search for what should we do based upon the things that are happening around us. And the ultimate answer to that is the reason why the 10 toes are allowed to be, it's part of Yahweh's plan to cause his people to leave exile and to return to the land of Israel as a part of the fulfillment of the messianic task to gather and to unite the 12 tribes of Israel. So we need to understand two things. What's going on out there with the tactics of the enemy, which is the 10 toes, and I want to focus on talking about the iron part, because you've probably heard teachings about Islam and the role that Islam is playing in all of this. So I don't really need to cover that. But then also I want to hopefully share with you what should be our biblical response. What should be our reaction to these things? Well, all of you have probably heard the term the New World Order. And that term is being promoted in the West, the United States, and Europe. And there is a plan by the global elite, which is basically the Western global elite leaders and rulers, whose source goes to the banking system. The root of all this goes to the banking system and the control of money, that they desire to bring about one world government. And ultimately, this was the purpose of the creation of the United Nations from World War II, is that this would ultimately be the entity through which one world government would operate. But in the plan to have one world government, they want to put the world into various regions. So they desire to have, they already have now, a European Union, a North American Union, a Mediterranean Union, an African Union, an Asian Union. And this would be regional world governments. And each of these regions are purposed to have their own currency. So Europe right now is the model for the rest of the world. Europe is now completed. And you know, in 1999, Europe got the euro. The euro is the currency of the European Union. But the reason why I'm sharing this with you is because there was a very important and significant development in the last week or so regarding Europe. And that is that the final country, Czechoslovakia, is in the process now of ratifying the Lisbon Treaty. What's the Lisbon Treaty? The Lisbon Treaty is the agreement among the European Union countries that formally makes the European Union a political union, a political entity. That with the Lisbon Treaty, it sets up the European Union as a political governmental structure, and It makes that Europe will have now its own president. But in setting up the European Union through the Lisbon Treaty, it does away with the national sovereignty of individual European states. That states within the European Union must be consistent with European law. They must be in line with European law. And the European political structure, the leaders at the top of the European Union are not going to be directly elected by the people. They're appointed. And so not only do you have individual countries that have now lost their sovereignty, don't even have their own individual currencies, but those who will be running Europe will not be directly elected by the people. So the global elite will now be able to run the European Union according to their agenda, and the people don't have a voice, a real practical voice, in opposing the agenda. Now, how does this play into Bible prophecy? Well, if you're watching the peace process, that the European Union is strongly advocating that Israel make an agreement to establish a Palestinian state. And with the passing of the Lisbon Treaty, it makes the European Union a federal state. It makes the European Union an entity of being a federal state that the European Union can enter into treaties with other entities. And so for the very first time, now with the passing of the Lisbon Treaty, the European Union can politically say to Israel that if you do not agree to a Palestinian state, you cannot trade with the European Union. And this is the tactic that the global elite has used to get those to play ball with them who don't want to play. They always manipulate things economically. And so until we had the passing of the Lisbon Treaty, the European Union saying that you cannot trade with us wasn't as real as what it is now with the passing of the Lisbon Treaty. And so the Western globalist elite who desire to bring about a one world government system and a one world currency where the leaders of the West would be controlling the politics of this one world government, and they would be controlling the one world currency in order to gain power so that their ideas can be accepted by the world. They've created this European Union so it has a political and economic base that they can use the political and economic power of Europe to squeeze other countries and other regions of the world to abide by their desires. And their political desires is the agenda of the global elite. So now, since with the passing of the Lisbon Treaty, Europe is now a political union. It already has its own currency. This model is planned for the rest of the world. And the North American Union is next to come in line modeling the European Union. Well, the European Union is a democratic, socialist, federal state. In other words, we're going to let the people vote to give them the perspective like they're having a say in who our politicians are. But when you get to the very top, they really don't have a say about who leads them at the very top in a direct way. But in order to make the people feel like they're not being dictated to, which they really are, we're going to allow them to vote. But actually, our system of government is socialism. Europe is a socialist entity. Well, if we're going to have one world government is to be democratic, worldwide socialism. And since Europe is already there, we need the United States to line up with this model as well. So what's going on right now in the Obama administration is to make that transition for the United States to be socialistically in line with Canada, in line with Europe, and so that we're on a common system and we have common laws so we can merge the systems together. And that is what is in the process of happening in America. So they've created this economic crisis to give the rationale to bring our banking system, our automotive system, and now they want to bring our healthcare system under governmental socialistic control. But as you know, the government in the United States, in effect, is broke. And so ultimately, after they bring everything under government control, and then the government's broke, the assets that belong to the government and the government's broke. Now, who gets to say about the assets that is under government control when the government goes broke? Well, ultimately, it's those who are providing the money. And who's that? It's from the banking system. So it's the banking establishment that's going to say what's going to happen to the assets that are now being put under government control. And what do you think, and how do you think they want those assets to be allocated? They want those assets to be a part of the one world government system. So it's a means of seizing the assets of the country. Our country is in the process of being foreclosed and the assets taken from the American people. So that process is the government gets control of the assets, then the government goes broke, and those who are lending to the government actually now owns the assets. So this is what's going on, and I believe Obama has been appointed to lead this transition. He's been appointed to be the person to sell it to an ignorant people who don't know, who can't discern what is going on. Because rather than telling you that if the government controls health care, then the government is going to make decisions about everything because they have no competition, rather than telling you it's so that your life can be controlled from the time you're born to the time you die, rather than telling you it's a part of enslaving you, they say, well, it's to help those who don't have insurance. Look how bad it is for those who don't have insurance. They always sell it in a positive way, but there's an agenda behind it. And so this is all prophesied to happen in the Bible. This is a part of that beast and that beast system. And this is a part of the toes that are of iron. And so it says the toes of iron and the toes of clay, but it says that the iron doesn't mix with the clay. So we have the clay part of this beast system, I believe, is Islam. And what the West, the global elite, is trying to do, they're trying to merge this Western agenda of one world government and everything that they're doing, and they're trying to marry it with Islam and the Arab world. And the way that they intend to merge it is through a peace agreement between Israel and the Arab world. As a part of that peace agreement, there's going to be contained within it how you economically integrate the Middle East and Europe, the European Union. Now, the nations of the Middle East, they are in a partnership that is called the Mediterranean Union. The Union of the Mediterranean formally came in 2008. And the current talks are between the European Union and the Mediterranean Union. And they desire to have a merger with the two. Because if the Western global elite are to run the world in a one world government system, you need the power of the West, that is the power of the North American Union and the European Union, in cooperation with each other. But in order to really control the world, you need to have control of the Middle East and the resources of the Middle East. And the way that they want those resources to be linked with Western control is through a peace agreement, and to be friendly toward the Arab world, which means to be friendly toward Islam. So if you want to know why the Western media wants to be friendly toward Islam, it is a part of an agenda which the Bible prophesies is going to be in the end of days. Now, I believe the way in which they're going to try to bring about the North American Union, because the United States, specifically the people in the United States, aren't so willing to just allow it to happen. It's going to be forced upon you. And the way it's going to be forced upon you is through the collapse of the dollar. That when the dollar collapses and are worthless, and you're not going to be able to use the dollar because it isn't worth anything, you're going to need a new currency to replace it. And so you replace the collapsed dollar with a North American currency, and at the same time, you use the collapse of the dollar to bring about a world currency. To bring about a world currency, because if you're going to have a world government, you need to have a world political structure, and you need to have a world currency. Now, the U.S. dollar has been playing the role of being the world's reserve currency, which means the whole world settles its transactions in dollars. And that's really, in essence, the only thing that's keeping the dollar alive, is that transactions in the world are settled in U.S. dollars, mainly oil transactions. So the world needs dollars because they settle their transactions in dollars. But now, in the past year, increasingly, the nations of the world are saying, we do not want to settle our transactions in dollars. And China and other nations of the world are making agreements that they are going to settle their transactions in their own currencies. And so ultimately, the days of the dollar are numbered. And if we're going to understand the beast and the beast system, we not only need to understand the role that Islam plays in the end of days, but we also need to understand the secular humanist Western element and aspect of it. And I want to share with you an interpretation of Revelation chapter 13. And if you understand biblical interpretation, Torah principles, that Scripture has an application on multiple levels. So therefore, what I'm about to share with you, I'm not going to try to claim is the only meaning of the text. I believe it is a meaning of the text. So Revelation 13, verse 1, it says, I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea. So when you see the word beast, if you take it back to the Torah, the word beast means an enemy of Israel. So there's an enemy and an opponent of Israel that's rising up. And this beast was like a leopard, his feet as the feet of a bear, his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And if you go back to the book of Daniel, that image that Nebuchadnezzar saw is also interpreted through these animals of being a leopard and a bear and a lion, etc. And so, basically, the beast system of the end of days is a combination of all the previous systems. The beast system in the end of days is a combination of the Babylonian system, the Media-Persian system, the Greek system, the Roman system. It's a combination of them all put together. And so Babylon isn't the beast. It is a beast. Media-Persia isn't the beast. It's a beast. Greece isn't the beast. It's a beast. Rome isn't the beast. It's a beast. Islam isn't the beast. It's a beast. And the Western New World Order, one world government system that's being promoted by the West isn't the beast. It's a beast. And together, they're the beast system. That it has different components of it. And different elements and aspect of it. So you'll hear one teacher describing one element and aspect of the beast system. Another teacher will teach you another an element and aspect of the beast system. So if you hear a teaching about Islam being part of the beast system, it's correct because it's an element of it. If you hear about the European Union and America and the West and secular humanism, the New World Order, yes, it's a part of it. But together, they're the whole picture. But regarding this beast, it says in Revelation 13, verse 3, and I saw one of the heads as it were wounded to death. One of the heads. One of the heads, which means it has multiple heads. It has multiple elements, but one of the heads. Now, I believe one of the heads is a reference to the United States of America. And one of these heads that was wounded to death, I believe, is the collapse of the U.S. dollar. When the dollar collapses, the world will be in panic. All the stock markets around the world will just collapse when the dollar collapses. And 25% of world consumption is by the citizens of the United States of America. If America falls, the world's going to fall. And it's going to look like, how is our economic system ever going to be strong again? But then it says, his deadly wound was healed. And so how is the wound of the collapse of the dollar going to be healed? It's by bringing in a North American currency and a world currency. And once you have the introduction of the North American currency, some people believe it's got to be called the Amero, and the world currency, the world's economic system will stabilize. Because this will be the setting forth of the international economic structure of one world government. And it says, and all the world wondered after the beast, meaning once you have the new international economic system set up, the one world currency from the collapse of the dollar, then all the world is going to be following the one world government system. They will all become a part of it. And they worship the dragon, which gave power to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like to the beast, and who is able to make war with him? Well, if you go back to Revelation chapter 12, it talks about, in verse 3, there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns. And this beast goes on and is described in Revelation 13, which I just shared with you. And it's this beast that rises up out of the sea that has 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns, is at war with the God of Israel and the redemption of his people from exile. The last clash of before Messiah comes is between the beast and the beast system waging war against the people of the God of Israel who believe in Yeshua, who are following his Torah, and recognize that this is the end of the exile and it's time to return to the land of Israel. The beast system is going to oppose that. And that's what Revelation 12 is about. Well, Revelation 12 seems to indicate that this woman who has upon her head a crown of 12 stars, the 12 stars represents the 12 tribes of Israel, that this beast system is born at the same time that this woman that has 12 stars, that she gives birth. And so from the time that the woman gives birth, there's 1,260 days. That's the last 3.5 years. And so how long does the beast and the beast system rule in Revelation 13, verse 5? 42 months. That's 1,260 days. So the same time that the woman gives birth in Revelation 12 is the same time that the beast begins to rule. So Messiah, for those of you who know the festivals, Messiah is going to set his feet down on the Mount of Olives on Yom Kippur. What precedes him setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives is a 3.5 year Great Tribulation period. So when does the Great Tribulation period start? It starts at a Passover. It starts at a Passover. So at some future Passover, you're going to see the setting up of one world government with one world currency that's going to come about from the collapse of the U.S. dollar. And you're also going to see what Revelation 12 is talking about, the woman that's given birth. Who is being born is Zion. And Zion is the 12 tribes united. So that brings us to, and what should bring us to, is why you are here today. You actually are here today because you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. You got drawn to the message of the Torah, and you're understanding the message of Messiah's role to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel and how that message relates and pertains to you. So why has this awareness come in the last 10, 15 years? Or for some of you, the last 2 to 5 years. Some of you, the last year. Why is it happening now? Why didn't it happen 50 years ago? Why didn't it happen 100 years ago? Because we are a part of the ministry of Elijah. And the ministry of Elijah, as defined in Malachi in chapter 4 and verse 4, the message of the ministry of Elijah, which Elijah's ministry and message precedes the coming of the Messiah. And the message of Elijah is to remember the Torah of Moses in Malachi chapter 4 and verse 4. Remember the Torah of Moses. Malachi 4:5 says, Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. So the message of Elijah is to remember the Torah, to return to the Torah. So as we are returning to the Torah, these world events are coming together as well at the same time. Because ultimately, there is going to be a clash between the two. That Yahweh's purpose for allowing the beast and the beast system to arise is to make his people who are in exile uncomfortable so that they're willing to ask the question, what is going on in the world around me and what does it mean? And the answer is, it's the end of the exile. And it's the time of Messiah's return. And Messiah is going to judge that beast in the beast system. He's the stone that crushes the feet that is iron and clay. That's partially the beast system is the secular humanist Western global establishment that is working to bring about a secular humanist one world government along with Islam, the Arab world, that both hate the nation of Israel. One, Islam is trying to overtly express that hate. We're going to kill you. They don't apologize for it. Wherein the West is trying to destroy Israel, but through the mask of saying, let's have peace. So you have both beast systems that are using two different tactics, but yet they're working together and their goal is the same. Because who really believes that the reason why there's no peace in the Middle East is because a few Jews live on the mountains of Israel? That's the reason why we don't have peace in the world. Now let's be serious about that. And by bringing the enemies of Israel and allowing them to have the mountains of Israel and to have East Jerusalem, that's got to cause their enemies to say, oh, you know, let's hug and kiss from now on and we're not going to fight anymore. So now, anyone with a rational mind knows that that's not the case. So those who are advocating that, which is basically the West, Europe, the United States, they are actually creating the environment and the circumstances to do away with the nation of Israel. Because their agenda is they want the whole world to believe, to not believe in the God of Israel. The globalist agenda is that the whole world would not believe in and worship the God of Israel. And so in order to weaken those who believe in the God of Israel, you have to wage war against those who believe in the God of Israel. And so in the West, that war is being waged by wanting you to be a part of the Western secularist Greco-Roman mindset and the values of the Greco-Roman society. And I don't need to tell you, in the last generation, we are losing our children. That rather than our faith and our faith numbers maintaining in America, it's decreasing, and it's from the influence of the world around us. But ultimately, the God of Israel is going to fight for the nation of Israel, and he's going to defeat the gods of the beast system. And that is what is going to be shortly taking place around us. And now, I just spent my time so far to describe with you what's going on in the enemy's camp that we must be aware of, that we must not have our eyes hidden from. But at the same time, we need to realize what our biblical response to it should be. The initial response that the God of Israel is already preparing us is bringing us into the knowledge and the understanding of the Torah. But, you know, rather than standing back and looking down and seeing the forest and what's in the forest and the purpose of the forest and how you live in the forest, we who have been brought into Torah, we're getting caught up on what the tree looks like. That tree that's right in front of us, what does it look like? Let's describe it and let's try to dissect it. And rather than seeing the big purpose of why we're being drawn in the Torah, we're in 150 million different splinter groups and we're all disagreeing about how we should follow the Torah. That's not the purpose of why he brought you into the Torah. The purpose of why he brought you into the Torah was to prepare you for the ingathering of the 12 tribes of Israel in the end of the exile in these days through the redemptive work of the Messiah for you to be able to identify it and to walk in it. And so when you are embracing the Hebrew roots of your faith, when you are embracing the Torah, you must keep everything centered and focused on Yeshua the Messiah. Because Yeshua said in John in chapter 5 and verse 46, he's dialoguing with the Pharisees who said, well, we don't know whether you're the Messiah or not, but we know we're supposed to follow the Torah. And his response was this. Yeshua's response was this. For had you believed Moses, you would believe in me, for he wrote of me. He's saying, you don't believe and you're not following the Torah unless you believe in me, because the Torah is written about me. So we have those who've been coming into the Torah. Thank God they're only a minority, but sadly, there's too many of them who's embraced the message so well that they think that ultimately they should be converting to Judaism. And they take Yeshua and throw him away, and they take the Brit HaRashah and throw it away, and now they say, we've arrived. You know what you did? You just came out of the right side of the ditch and you went into the left side of the ditch. But you don't realize the left side of the ditch is bigger than the right side of the ditch. You've never been there before, so you say, wow, this ditch is great. I love it. You know, fighting and feuding about what the Torah says and not believing in Yeshua as the Messiah and throwing away the Brit HaRashah. Some say, well, that's great. I've arrived now. But Yeshua said, if the blind lead the blind, won't they both fall in the ditch? And so how can you say you're following the Torah, and Yeshua said that the Torah is written about him, and you are not making Yeshua the center of your Torah faith and your Torah studies? And so in my frustration in seeing this happen, and I put together a 12-hour DVD teaching entitled Yeshua from Genesis to Revelation. And when Shabbat is over, for those of you who are interested in it, we'll make it available to you. But in order to have a proper understanding of the Hebrew roots of your faith, in order to have a proper understanding of what it means to follow the Torah, you must keep everything centered on Yeshua, the Messiah. that Yeshua is in the Torah. Now, in John chapter 1, verse 3, and Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 and 16, it says that Yeshua created the heavens and the earth. It says in Galatians chapter 3, verse 16 and verse 29, that Yeshua made covenant with Abraham. It says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, that Yeshua is the rock that was with the children of Israel in the wilderness. It says in James chapter 4, verse 12, that there's one lawgiver who is able to save. The one that's able to save is also the lawgiver. And so, then the one that defeated Pharaoh and his army in the Red Sea, Exodus chapter 15, verse 6, it says the one that defeated Pharaoh and his army in the Red Sea is the right hand. Who's the right hand? It's Yeshua the Messiah. Well, who do you think was the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night that led the children of Israel in their journeys? It's Yeshua. So Yeshua created the heavens and the earth. Yeshua made covenant with Abraham. Yeshua led the children of Israel out of Egypt. Yeshua defeated Pharaoh and his army in the Red Sea. Yeshua was the rock that was in the wilderness. Yeshua is the lawgiver. Yeshua is the glory of God that filled the tabernacle. And Yeshua is the bridegroom of the marriage that took place between the lawgiver and the bridegroom and his people, known as the nation of Israel or the house of Jacob. That Yeshua is in covenant relationship with the physical house of Jacob. So there's a literal, natural house of Jacob that Yeshua is in covenant relationship with, who had physical descendants from those who were physically at Mount Sinai. But in breaking the covenant, they were scattered into the nations of the world. And who do you think was it that scattered the nation of Israel into the nations of the world? It's the one that gave them, the one that is the lawgiver is the one that did that. So it was Yeshua that scattered the house of Jacob into the nations of the world. And then it says in Jeremiah in chapter 31 and verse 10, "Hear the word of Yahweh, O you nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, He that scattered Israel will gather him." The one that scattered Israel will gather him. Well, who's the one that gathers the exiles of Israel? It is the role and the task and the ministry of the Messiah. And it says in Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7, "Alas, for that day is great, it's none like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble." So referring to Jacob's trouble, it says in Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 3, "For lo, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah. I'm going to cause them to return to the land that I gave their fathers, and they will possess it." So it's talking about the gathering of Israel and Judah and bringing them to the land. And speaking about bringing Israel and Judah to the land, it says, "That day is great, it's none like it, it's the time of Jacob's trouble." So Jacob's trouble is the time when Israel and Judah will return to the land. And then it says in Jeremiah 30, verse 7, "Therefore fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, says Yahweh, neither be dismayed, O Israel. For lo, I will save you from afar, and your seed from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return, shall be in rest, be quiet, and none will make him afraid." And so, what it also says here in Jeremiah chapter 30 is that Jacob is being gathered from the nations And he's being gathered from a people who is stronger than he is. So as the 12 tribes are being gathered back to the land during Jacob's trouble, the beast and the beast system is being judged by the Messiah of Israel. And this conflict in judging the beast system and delivering Israel and Judah from exile, it's likened unto the deliverance of the children of Israel out of Egypt, when there was one that was mightier than them in the natural, and that was Pharaoh. And that just as plagues came upon Pharaoh that ultimately created the environment for the children of Israel to be redeemed out of Egypt, that which you're studying in the Torah is a prophecy of the end of days. And Paul explained this in 1 Corinthians in chapter 10 and verse 11, where he said, "Now all those things happened unto them for examples, but they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." That what happened in the Torah in the children of Israel being redeemed from Egypt was written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. That is, the generation that would be gathered from exile, and they would be redeemed from an enemy who in the natural is stronger than them, that the miracle way in which it's going to happen is likened unto the miracle way in which the children of Israel came out of Egypt. It says in Micah, in chapter 7 and verse 15, "According to the days of your coming out of the land of Egypt, according to those days will I show unto him marvelous things." According to those days will I show unto him marvelous things. So it will happen according to like it did happen. So Pharaoh in the end of days is this beast in this beast system that will not let Israel go, that suppresses Israel. And just as judgment came upon Pharaoh in the land of Egypt that allowed the children of Israel to go, there will be judgment that will come upon the beast and the beast system that will allow us to leave exile and return to the land of Israel. Now, it's the role and the task and the function of the Messiah to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel. Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 3 says, "I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I've driven them, and I will bring them again to their folds, and they will be fruitful and increase." The subject is, I'm going to gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I've driven them. That is the subject. Regarding that subject, it says in verse 5, "Behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king will reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth." Who is that king? It's the Messiah. "And in his days," the days of the Messiah, "Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell safely." Dwell safely from whom? Their enemies, who took them captive. The beasts of the field, who are holding them captivity and won't let them go. That in the days of Messiah, Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell safely. And this is the name whereby he will be called, Yahweh our righteousness. In other words, the name of the Messiah is Yahweh our righteousness. So, when Yeshua died on the tree, he did so for the purpose of gathering and uniting the 12 tribes of Israel. And Jeremiah I'm sorry. In John chapter 11, John chapter 11, in verses 49 through 52, we're told that Caiaphas is the high priest. He prophesied in verse 51 that Yeshua would die for that nation. What nation is Caiaphas prophesying that Yeshua would die for? It's going to be the house of Judah or the Jewish people. But then it says in verse 52, and not for that nation only. So Caiaphas prophesied he would die for that nation, but not that nation only. So how many nations is he dying for? He's dying for two nations. And it says, but that he would gather together in one the children of God scattered abroad. So Yeshua is dying for two nations. Who are the children of God? Who are scattered abroad and who are to become one? Who is that referring to? That's referring to the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, with this many people here, there's always got to be some who are here who are just hearing this message and trying to digest it and understand it for the first time. And because growing up in traditional Christianity, our minds wasn't that we're a part of the 12 tribes. Let me explain to you how Yeshua dying to unite the 12 tribes relates and pertains to every believer in Yeshua as the Messiah. You see, when you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, you are a part of the commonwealth of Israel because he is the king of Israel. He's the king of Israel. You believe in Yeshua, you become his child. And the family is named after the head of the family. Yeshua is the king of Israel, so his children are Israelites. Now, he has two types of Israelite children, natural born and those who are adopted. But when they get adopted, their name becomes Israel. Now, it says in Ephesians in chapter 2 and verse 12, it says, at that time you were without Messiah, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. Look, without Messiah, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. Without Messiah, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, which means in Messiah, you're a part of the commonwealth of Israel. You're a part of the commonwealth of Israel. And what do we learn in Romans in chapter 11? In Romans chapter 11, verse 17, we're told that the wild branches are grafted in. And then we're told in Romans chapter 11, verse 24, that the natural branches are grafted in. Now, whether you're a wild branch or whether you're a natural branch, both are grafted in. Grafted in to the olive tree, of which Messiah is the root of the olive tree, and we are the branches of that olive tree. So if you were not physically descended of the 12 tribes, and you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, you get grafted into his family. But what's the name of his family? Israel, or the house of Jacob. It says in Luke chapter 1, verse 33, that he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. That the new covenant, Jeremiah 31, 31, was only made with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, which is repeated in Hebrews in chapter 8 and verse 8. Messiah's family is the house of Israel and the house of Judah. If you are from the nations, if you're not physically descended from the 12 tribes, then you get adopted into the new covenant, which means you are a part of the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Now, if you're Jewish, then you're the house of Judah. If you're not Jewish, you're the house of Israel. And what if you are not physically, literally of the house of Israel? You become adopted into the house of Israel. So Messiah came to gather the 12 tribes of Israel, and if you're from the nations, by being a Messiah, you are a partaker of his covenant of promise. You are a partaker of his covenant of promise. So Messiah's redemptive work to die to unite the 12 tribes of Israel relates to all those that are Israel. Whether you're natural born or whether you are adopted or you are grafted in. Now in Acts chapter 1 and verse 6, Yeshua was asked, when are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel? The restoration of the kingdom to Israel is the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. When are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel? When are you going to unite the 12 tribes of Israel? And so he says in Acts 1:8, you will receive power after the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses. Witnesses of what? Witness of the restoration of the kingdom to Israel. And you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth. And so when it says that you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea, that is the domain of the house of Judah. And in Samaria, that's the northern kingdom. To the uttermost parts of the earth, that would include everybody. And it would also include Israel and Judah that scattered to the ends of the earth. So Messiah died to unite the 12 tribes of Israel. And we weren't taught in church that Messiah died to unite the 12 tribes of Israel, even though that's what it says in John chapter 11, verses 49 through 52. So how is he going to awaken us to understand what the redemptive work of the Messiah is to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel? That's the purpose of the outpouring of the Holy Spirit in the ministry of Elijah, to give us a heart for the Torah, for the Hebrew language, for Jerusalem, for the land of Israel. It's to first draw our hearts. So now our hearts are drawn, our heads don't understand what's going on. So our heads are going to seek to find out what our heart is drawn to. And ultimately, our heads are going to understand that we are in the end of days and that Messiah is going to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel in the end of days. So what did he tell Jacob in Jeremiah chapter 30? Don't be afraid. Why does he have to tell Jacob not to be afraid? Because when Israel and Judah is going to be gathered to the land during Jacob's trouble, it's going to be the time of the greatest beast entity that's ever been in the world. Because the beast system, the end of days, is a compound of all the beasts into one in the end of days. I mean, the greatest beast and beast system is going to be when he's going to be gathering Jacob during Jacob's trouble. So why does he have to tell him to not be afraid? Because in the natural, you know, you're going to be afraid. And the reason why he's telling him not to be afraid is because, hey, I'm going to deliver you. And I'm going to gather you. I'm going to defeat your enemy. And that stone is going to crush the toes. And that stone that crushes the toes is going to rise, and it's going to become a great mountain. So that is the good news that we look forward to. But there is a process of pain to get to the birth. The birth is the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. The pain to get there is the tribulation period. And the pain is the beast system setting up one world government, setting up one world currency. The pain is in this process, we have an economic collapse in America. And so I've been in my ministry sharing and emphasizing three critical events of the end of days. This is not the full list, of course, but three critical events that we watch for to allow us to understand that we are in these days and we are in these times. And so those events are the creation of a Palestinian state, which the Bible says is dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. that an agreement to establish a Palestinian state is a tribulation event. Number two, a military conflict with Iran by the West, particularly the United States, is also a tribulation event. And thirdly, the collapse of our economic system, the collapse of the U.S. dollar, also is a tribulation event. Now, all three of those things are possible to happen in the next year. It's possible to happen in the next 6 months. Will it? I don't know. But is it possible? Yes. Why is it possible? It's possible because right now the Obama administration is very frustrated regarding the peace process, and they want to see the creation of a Palestinian state as soon as possible. And something just happened in the past week that I believe is critical in the process. There is scheduled Palestinian elections for January the 24th, 2010. But this week, Mahmoud Abbas, who is the leader of the Fatah faction of the Palestinian Authority, and he's the one that the West and Israel's been negotiating with regarding creating a Palestinian state and a peace agreement. This week, he said, he made a threat that he is not going to run in elections in January the 24th as president of the Palestinian Authority. He's resigning and someone else has to take over. And the reason why he did this is because he wants the United States to put pressure on Israel to cause them to stop building settlements. And the United States hasn't went that far, and the Palestinians are demanding it. So in order to show the seriousness of their desires, Mahmoud Abbas says, I resign, I'm not going to be up for re-election, which is going to cause a crisis in the United States and the West, because that's who they've been working with. And Mahmoud Abbas is now forcing the United States and Europe to take sides in the conflict, and they're basically saying, choose us or we're not playing ball. And I think the likelihood's very great that the United States and Europe is going to choose the side of the Palestinians, is going to choose the side of the Arab world, and they are going to put pressure upon Israel to make a peace agreement. And a part of that pressure, I believe, might entail, with the passing of the Lisbon Treaty, that the European Union will tell Israel, if you don't make an agreement to establish a Palestinian state quickly and soon, then you cannot trade with Europe. And so Israel's going to have to decide whether it wants to be able to economically trade with Europe or whether it wants a Palestinian state. That's the type of pressure that's going to be put on Netanyahu. And I think in the end, Israel is not willing to stand up to that pressure. And it will result in the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And it's possible that that threat to get Israel to sign an agreement to establish a Palestinian state, it's possible that that could happen by this spring, by this Passover. It's possible. Will it? I don't know. I don't know whether it will be delayed for another year, another 2 years, or longer. I don't know, but it's possible. Meanwhile, a decision now is being made regarding Iran and the situation there. Right now, we're trying to get Iran to agree to stop their construction of their nuclear reactor through political pressure. But if it doesn't work and we're not giving it a whole lot longer time to work, there's going to be a decision be made about a military conflict with Iran. And that is possible. That military conflict is possible, you know, in the next 6 months or the next year. And in the past year, the international community have been explicitly talking about replacing the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency and introducing a global currency. In the past week, for those of you who are familiar with George Soros, he had an interview and he said China is going to be the leader in the New World Order, and the United States is going to have to decline in its power and influence, and the world no longer should be using U.S. dollars. There needs to be a new international system that's put in place because the current system is broke. That's what he just said in the past week. So all of this is possible, and we need to begin to be prepared for it. We need to begin to prepare physically. We need to begin to prepare emotionally. We need to begin to prepare biblically. And all this, to be quite frank with you, all this fussing and feuding about how you follow this and that element of the Torah, and I can't fellowship with your group and you can't fellowship with my group because you don't do it right, it's all a bunch of garbage. And we need to wake up and realize what all this really is about. It's the Spirit of God trying to awaken us and to prepare us for the end of the exile and the return to the land of Israel, wherein the Messiah will be glorified in the days and the times in which we are living. And so that's pretty much my message that Yahweh laid upon my heart today to share with you. It's a watchman message. It's pretty much to make you aware of what's happening in the world around you with European Union, the Lisbon Treaty, and why things are happening in the United States the way they are. It's all a part of a plan. It's all a part of agenda by the beast and the beast system. And what it means for us is that we need to begin to prepare for the end of the exile and the returning to the land of Israel, because He's promised to deliver us, because in delivering Jacob, the Messiah will be glorified. And this is the prayer that Yeshua prayed in John in chapter 17 and verse 21. He prayed that they may be one. He's praying for the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. As you, Father, are in me and I in thee, that they may be one in us, that the world would believe that you sent me. You see, when the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel comes, the world will believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. So the role of the Messiah to gather and to unite the 12 tribes of Israel is the gospel, or the good news of the kingdom. The good news is Messiah is in covenant relationship with the nation of Israel, whose sins are forgiven, and they acknowledge him as their king, and they're following his Torah. That is the good news. That is the gospel of the kingdom. So it says in Matthew 24 that the gospel of the kingdom will be preached as a witness. You know how it's going to be preached as a witness? By it physically happening. The witness is the physical happening, not someone standing up on a stage and telling you about it. It's physically happening. It will be witnessed by the whole world physically. And so once you have that witness, the gathering of the 12 tribes of Israel, then the end will come. Messiah will set his feet down on the Mount of Olives. One more time, for those of you who may be interested in this 12-hour DVD series, Yeshua from Genesis to Revelation, it will be available to you tonight after sundown. So thank you for allowing me to share with you this morning. I pray that you've been blessed. Shalom and Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.
Thank you very much, brother. Shalom, brother. Absolutely. Yep.